So why does an infant or a very young child do the things that they do? Do they think about what they're going to do? Do they wonder about the consequences of the thing they're planning to do? Certainly not little babies. Little babies are just in the activity of the natural life, responding to their own urges and desires that come mostly from their body or from the influence of people who are around them. What about a five-year-old? To what extent does a five-year-old start to think and plan or scheme or notice the difference between what his parents want for him and what he wants for himself? Or a 15-year-old? What's it like for a 15-year-old? What does that 15-year-old have in his mind thinking about what he is thinking, comparing what he wants on the inside to what might be acceptable to the people around him? You know, as early as around two, about the time they start to become verbal, children begin to tell lies or deceive. It starts simple as saying when the parent says, "Who did this?" And the child says, "I don't know," even though they did it. That tells us that already with a little child of two, there is a beginning of the difference between inner knowing and outer knowing. And that's what the second day is really all about, seeing the difference between inner knowing and outer knowing. And it's something that we actually grow in as we become adults. A 15-year-old has a pretty well-developed awareness of how to get by in the world. We have a middle son and a younger son, and the middle son was always very compliant, always happy to do whatever his mother asked, and the younger son was always adversarial. It was like he couldn't stop himself from opposing anything he knew his mom wanted him to be doing. And it was especially in his relationship with his mother that this oppositional reflex came up with him. One day, after they were both adults, our middle son confessed that he had gone to this youngest and said, "Look, Matt, you know, you're making life hard for yourself. You're always struggling. You're always in a fight. You're often not getting what you want because you're like this with mom." He says, "Just go along with her. You know, act like you're going to do what you want, what she wants you to do. You don't even have to do it as long as she thinks you're going to, and things will be so much easier." And it was like Caleb saw that really clearly, that he could have an inner way of thinking and acting, and then this outer behavior that actually was accomplishing his ends. And he hoped that his younger brother could get some of the same insights. The five-year-old might not see that avoiding consequences by denying they have done something, you know, you avoid punishment by saying, "No, it wasn't me. I didn't do it." The five-year-old is not necessarily clear in his mind that that's bad or a wrong thing to do. It's just part of the natural response, like pulling your hand away from a hot stove. You know, you say what's going to work. But as we get older, we begin to see the 15-year-old clearly knows that when he's lying, he's not in a state of goodness. So becoming aware of our beliefs and our principles and our values, and even more so, our motives and intentions, is what the second day is all about. The work of the second day is beginning to see that there's a difference between what we do on the inside, what we think and want, and what we do on the outside, or there can be. Of course, even from earliest infancy, we live and have a spirit or an internal being, and it connects us with the Lord and with the heavens. But we're totally unaware of this. As I said at the beginning, the little baby doesn't engage with its inner mind. It just completely lives in the external life. But as we grow older, we begin to be able to distinguish. So in the verse 6 of Genesis, it says, the expanse is in the midst of the waters. That's what God says, make an expanse in the midst of the waters. And that expanse in the midst of the waters is at first like our minds, where we have that inner knowing, but we're not really clear about its relationship to our outer behavior. But then in verse 7, God says, God makes the expanse, and then he says, make a distinction between the waters under and the waters over the expanse. A 5-year-old wouldn't see the difference here, but a 15-year-old might. And it's a process. It doesn't happen immediately. Like all of the things of the 6 days of creation, they happen one after the other through the course of our life if we are regenerated. And not everybody, of course, gets to the fifth or the sixth day, but we all have that opportunity. So let's read in Secrets of Heaven 24, which explains a lot of this. It starts by saying the second thing, and actually the first thing that it's talking about is what happened on the first day, where the person begins to be aware of the existence of God and of spiritual things. But the second thing we begin to notice while being reborn is that the inner self exists. We become aware that the attributes of the inner self are good feelings and true ideas, which are the Lord's alone. While we are being reborn, our outer self is such that it still believes we are acting on our own when we do what is good, and speaking on our own when we speak what is true. The Lord uses those things, allowing them to seem like our own, since such is our mindset, to lead us to doing what is good and speaking what is true. Consequently, we first learn to distinguish what is under the expanse, and only then do we learn to distinguish what is over the expanse. And I'll help you with this, because it's there's so much here. And the first thing that is said there is that we begin to notice that the inner self exists. This is something that's happening with the 5-year-old who knows enough not to be transparent or to be fully honest with his parents. We begin to notice that there is this internal and this external. The second point that it makes is that our outer self thinks that everything we think and do is our own. We do it our own. We get all the credit. We deserve praise. We did it. We chose to do it, and we did it. And the Lord uses, the third point, the Lord uses these things. He allows us to think that everything we think and do, everything we love and desire is our own in order to lead us to do what is good and to understand what is true. Because if our self isn't engaged, we don't really pay attention. If our delight doesn't at first come from ourselves, then we're not really interested. The teachings of the new church refer in places to remains or, not remains, but to means or immediate goods. And this is what's involved here. The Lord using loves, thoughts that we have that aren't heavenly in order to get us to begin to engage with heavenly things. A good example of that is we start doing good to others because we'll get praise, or because it's our job and we'll get paid, or because we'll be approved by our friends or our family, a pat us on the back and say, oh, that was wonderful. Those aren't really good reasons for doing good things, but the Lord uses them. The Lord uses them because without having something in us that He can use, we wouldn't do good things. And if we don't do good things, then we don't begin to experience the delight of doing good things. So reading further in number 24, another secret from heaven is that the Lord leads us by means of things that are really our own. Both the illusions of our senses and our cravings. The illusions of our senses are like it seems to us that we're the center of the universe. So it leads us by means of those things, but diverts us towards things that are true and good. So every single moment of regeneration carries us forward from evening to morning. So when you're doing something for the reward or for the praise or for the paycheck, you have an opportunity to experience the pleasure of doing it. You have an opportunity to experience the delight that it gives to other people. And it creates a place where those remains of childhood that we talked about last week, the remnant that is in there where the Lord is present with love, can be felt by us. And gradually, we begin to see that there's a difference. You know, I observe myself thinking about what others will think. But I would rather be doing something because it's the right thing to do. And we can't fix that. We can't fix that. It's the Lord who gradually moves us from this state of being engaged with our own selfish interests into a state where we love to do what is good because it is good and because it is from the Lord. And so you can see how this process happens little by little in our lives. So we're talking about the person who's motivated by reward, and we can see how this works. At first, the person is unaware of his motives. He's not really aware of why he does what he does. He's doing it because it gives him some kind of pleasure or reward, but he doesn't really reflect on that. He's only engaged in the external act of doing. But as he does, the good thing, then he experiences delight. And that delight that it brings to other people. And he becomes aware of motives of reward in himself. And he begins to aspire to be motivated by higher goods. So this is actually referred to in a number of different places in the Bible. For example, and it's not in your pew card, but in Isaiah 43, we read, "A crushed reed he does not break, and a smoldering flax he does not quench. He propels judgment towards truth." And that's really talking about the state of our external motives and desires, which are like a crushed reed or a smoldering flax. He doesn't put out those negative motivations that we have. Instead, the Lord uses them. And he doesn't break our illusions or extinguish our cravings. He bends them toward the truth and leads them towards actual goodness. And this actually is the work of the angels who are with us. We saw about horses and chariots of fire. Well, we have angels and spirits with us, and those angels and spirits are continually looking for ways to bend us towards goodness and truth. And they're continually overlooking or excusing the faultiness of our motives. Secrets of Heaven number 9 or 5980, which you do have, says, "Angels are always carefully watching evil spirits and demons' attempts and efforts with us." Because it's the evil spirits who inspire negative thoughts. It's evil spirits who stir up anger and resentment or justification to do whatever we want. And the angels with us are continually watching those spirits. And insofar as we let them, they turn evil into good, or at least into something better, or at the very least, into something less bad. And I like that progression, because the angels would love us to be turned to what is good. That we do everything from the purest of motives, and that it would enable us to experience the greatest delight. But if we aren't there yet, then they use it to bring us into the delight that is a little better than just self-interest, and gradually into a state of loving what is good. When I read passages like this one, I'm amazed at how the Lord works secretly through our lives to bring about our regeneration. You know, it seems so much regeneration is about you learn the truth, you compel yourself to do what is good, you stop doing bad things, and bingo, you get heavenly reward. But it's really not like that at all. The Lord is continually working through this firmament, this place where our spirit resides in the spiritual world, enabling us to see the things of higher realms, to see the things of the Lord and his kingdom, and to desire them, and then to bring order into our lower self. And because we're so tied to the sense of our own accomplishment and our own merit or reward, we need to go through trials as a part of the process of regeneration. And those trials enable us to see how powerless we are, and how if it weren't the Lord doing this work all along in our lives, if it weren't the angels continually bending our thoughts towards what is true, or moving our motives to become more genuine, then we would perish. So what are some of the things we might do to become aware or more aware of the inner being in ourselves, or of the heaven that is there available to us? Well, one thing we're told is that we can read the Word on a regular basis. Read and meditate. And Swedenborg talks about meditating not in the Eastern Om kind of meditation way, but actually sitting and thinking and allowing the thoughts of the heavens in to the ideas that are there in the story. So observing what the Lord and the angels are telling you as you read a psalm or something from the Gospels, and think, how does this apply to me? Another thing we can do is take time to foster the inner self. Prayers, like we say prayers on getting up or at going to bed at night, or when we eat, we often say a grace, give thanks to the Lord for what we're about to have. And these are all things that we're doing that help bring our lower self into the awareness of spiritual things that are going on all the time in our inner self. Practicing self-awareness. You know, it's really easy to be caught up in the external emotion if we're offended by what some person is doing. But we always have the ability to stop and examine what's going on in our own minds as a result of what some other person is doing. What am I thinking? Why do I feel this way? You know, is it because I'm feeling unloved? Is it because someone just disrespected me and now my ego is looking for a way to build myself back up? And we have that ability to stop and reflect on what's going on. We can ask ourselves, why am I doing this? Why am I thinking this way? Why am I feeling what I'm feeling? And anytime we do that, we're nurturing that inner part that is the firmament, the presence where angels and spirits dwell. And we're giving it power over our outer thought. Now, the hells like to grab hold of us and completely turn our attention downward to the life of the body and the things of the world. And the angels are continually trying to turn our minds and our eyes upward to see heavenly things. You could practice this week's task. I noticed after I printed the copies of the pew card that I left two words out of the task, but I'll read it and you can see where they are. Spend some time observing yourself and paying attention to how you're feeling and what you are thinking. Notice how it is the inner self that observes and can see what is in the outer self. I remember as a teenager coming to that awareness that I had the ability at any time to observe what was going on in my own mind. And so much of the time we don't actually stop and do that. But it's the mark of a spiritual person that he lives in that internal and continually is watching what's going on in the external and being able to keep that external in a state of order or connection with heaven. And finally, we can give thanks to God. You know, even when your first impulse is to take credit, you can practice saying, give God the praise. It's something I try to do sometimes out loud, mostly just to myself, when at the end of service I go out to the back and people say nice, polite things about the service, and I say to myself, give God the praise. Because otherwise, I go down into my ego, a place where I really don't want to be. And I stop focusing on how the Lord is using me to bless other people. Give God the praise. Amen.